Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, you're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, the podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Lonzo Liggins.
And I'm Daynor Gerald. Today, we're going to dive into the world of acting on stage and screen. What challenges and triumphs are people of color facing who choose such an extraordinary profession? Why does diversity on stage and screen impact society so profoundly? And how are actors of color feeling in Utah and other regional markets versus LA and New York?
Now, of course, we have two fabulous guests with us on the show today. Legends, if you will, absolute legends.
Yes.
Introduce yourselves. Let's start with you, Yolanda.
Hi, I'm Yolanda Stang. I am an actor, producer, casting director here in Utah. I've been doing it for way too long, so I'm not even going to tell you how long I've been doing it. And I'm just happy to be here. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Awesome. Yeah. And we also have Jerry Rapier.
Correct. Oh, yeah. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Said it properly.
Let's just say this. I've been saying his name wrong for the last 15 years.
Everybody does. It's all right. I'm Jerry Rapier. I'm the artistic director of Plan B Theater, which I have been in that position for 23 years. I'm the first person of color to lead a professional arts organization in the state's history, which I feel kind of good about and also kind of awkward about because it seems like I shouldn't be able to say that. Here we are.
Well, there are a lot of firsts associated with Plan B Theater, thanks to you. So we're going to get into that.
Yeah.
But a little bit more. What's coming up this year or next year at Plan B?
Oh, well, actually a piece featuring Yolanda. We have a play called Bitter Lemon coming up in April that features Yolanda playing Lady Macduff from the Scottish play. Playwright Melissa Leilani Larson has crafted this what if play, letting Lady Macduff have a little more to say than the 19 lines she has in the Scottish play.
That's awesome.
And well, so we'll hear what Yolanda does with that.
Fantastic.
You know what's crazy is that I've looked up to these three in my career. These guys, these two were definitely actors I admired. And then, of course, Jerry was the guy I wanted to, you know, get involved with the theater world. But you know what I do know? Jerry's been an actor himself, right? Tell us a little bit about your career.
When you just said these two actors that I respect, Jerry is the worst actor to ever walk the stage. Last very long. I was not very good, but I knew enough to look around and say, you know, this isn't where I should be.
Yeah.
I should be over there.
Yeah. What was one show that you did that you enjoyed?
When I first moved to Salt Lake City, which I realized this morning was 30 years ago, I got involved with a company called TheaterWorks West, which is now Pygmalion Theater Company. And I did a show that Teresa Sanderson cast me for the first time here in Salt Lake, and I played cats, like a literal cat, on stage with Barb Gandy. And that was back when I could squat on a staircase like a cat and walk the next day. I can't do that now. No.
That's great. Look, I rub my knees.
So, Yolanda, I want to hear a little bit about what got you involved as an actor. I mean, living in Utah, you started your career here. Yeah. What made you decide to
You're not even from here, though, right?
No, I'm originally from Chicago.
Oh, that's a great theater town.
Honestly, somebody told me I couldn't. That's why I got in.
Oh.
Yeah,
someone
I got
said,
in.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
And I was like, oh, no, wait a minute.
I love that.
I started here. And I had grown up in California. I was in Orange County, California. So I was close to L.A., but I never really pursued it in L.A. And thought that, I found there was an ad in the City Weekly, of all things.
Oh, okay.
And it said, it was just a big blank page, and it says, "We don't bleep around here." Yeah.
Oh.
The next expletive that got cut out, and it was an ad for an acting class called Actors Gang.
Wow.
And I went down and started in it and thought I'd give myself like a year to get an agent and figure things out. And before I knew it, Disney came in and they were looking, and there I was. I got an agent.
Had a prolific career ever since.
Yeah, but tell us about some of the stuff you've done.
So, you know, I'm the get in where I fit in queen. I really do. I've done it all, and I think that's the beauty of Utah is, you know, you could start off as an actor, and before you know it, you're a director, producer, casting director. But the work is kind of limited. I would say the bulk of it I do is going to be Hallmark and industrials, and mm-hmm. you know, the industrial feel, which is making videos for companies.
And of course, theater.
Yeah, and of course, and theater, I don't put them all in the same category just because mm-hmm. I remember hearing an actress say this once, film is for them, theater is for the actor. And so to me, it's a very special, special place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I do seek out at least one theater role a year, at least one somewhere,
that's brilliant.
Anywhere. Don't tell Equity, but I'll even do it for free if I have to find the right role.
You mentioned casting, and let's start the conversation there. We had a little bit of discussions in advance. Like, the whole process of acting starts with auditioning, right? And if you're an actor of color, if you're Black, Hispanic, Asian descent, whatever, it's kind of hard to know what the right thing is for you. So can you speak to the importance of how the casting process works to help make sure that actors of color get a chance to work?
I think the key is just to be sure that folks of color know they're invited to the table, they're invited into the room, there's a place for them that isn't specific to their cultural background, their ethnicity, the color of their skin, that things are more open, especially now. It should be a given that everyone is welcome in the room, but it's been closed for so long. It's imperative that producers extend a specific invitation. I think it's the onus is on us to make sure that people are clear.
Yeah, I think specificity is exactly it. Because in, I don't know about the theater world, but in the film and TV world, a lot of times I'll see a thing that says any ethnicity, which is not specific at all, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that process?
You know, it's so funny because I feel like they're getting a little bit better in film. You know, any ethnicity, that's been my bread and butter. Like anything that was saying any ethnicity, I would always go out for. It's the chances that we take, you know, why is this role labeled white? You know, why really is it? Is it because the husband is going to be white and that makes everybody feel comfortable? Is it because you're, you know, dare I say, I thought I had an audition and I really wanted to do it, thought it was a great character, but come to find out, I had to read the entire play to find out that there's a whole racist rant that the character says. Mm-hmm. So there's this like disconnect, like that character really should have been labeled Polish or Caucasian. And so everyone can't just put any ethnicity. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with that. Yeah. I would say the really hard part right now for me is during COVID, I moved into voiceover, and that's where it's really, really sticky right now. Yeah. Because they're asking for, they want a Black person, but they never see you.
So I know a lot of white artists who have learned
how to emulate.
White artists who've learned to emulate, and they work.
And then voiceover, they don't really know what you are.
Right. But they want it.
Yeah.
Which is sad because that's like you're stereotyping a Black voice if you're mimicking a Black voice, right? And in theater, I think that's interesting because in theater, there's also like you said, the character may have some very specific subtext that they say that like there's no such thing as colorblind casting if this character is going to do a racist rant. And you mentioned Sister Act because there's some talk to us about that.
Well, there has been quite a conversation about that particular musical in our theater community for the past couple of years. There have been multiple companies who have attempted to cast a white woman in the role of Dolores, which thankfully in all situations, the companies came around and addressed this issue. But the bigger issue is that it's an issue, period. Mm. The justification for that has been that originally the Disney film was written for Bette Midler. She passed on it. Whoopi Goldberg took the role and made it her own. Oh. But the stage play is specifically a black woman.
Oh.
And the dialogue supports that. The character description supports that. And
people were casting a white character.
Yeah. So a white actress. It kind of goes back to this any ethnicity thing. Like there's this, well, we tried. No one showed up. Mm-hmm. So we're going to cast the best person. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about making sure that the right door is open, that people know that it's open all the time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think during the COVID time, like right around 2020, when there was this big highlight about race, I think people, especially in the film industry and in theater as well, they started to get more careful with the language they were using and some of the breakdowns that you'd receive as an actor. Like prior to that, there was a little bit more clarity about what they're looking for. We're looking for a white guy. We're looking for a black guy. And it's kind of getting back to that, but they turned it into this any ethnicity thing. And I noticed they started using like comparisons to other characters. Well, we're looking for any ethnicity, kind of a Jack Black type, or you know, Jerry Seinfeld type. Right, so you were like, well, what does that mean?
Are you talking Jerry Seinfeld?
Right.
So you want me to pretend to be Jerry? Yeah. You know, we have, there is a talent agent in Utah who's a black, and we actually have a video where she discusses a little bit about some of these things. So let's take a look. This is Ashley Justice at Talent Management Group, and let's see what she had to say.
Hi, I'm Ashley Justice. I work at Talent Management Group, or TMG, in Salt Lake City, Utah, as a booking agent. And I just wanted to share a couple experiences or thoughts with you about working as a person of color in this industry. And honestly, it's been such an incredible experience. I really enjoy my job. I enjoy the people that I work with. Our talent are extremely incredible, obviously very talented people. They're just amazing and such a joy to work with, and they make my job that much more enjoyable. But I just wanted to touch on a couple things today. One of them being seeing so many opportunities for people of color in this industry in Utah. Definitely know that Utah isn't really known for being as diverse as other places. I mean, we're obviously growing and improving in that area for sure, which is awesome. But I do have a lot of conversations just in everyday life, just, you know, outside of my job with people that think that there's not a lot of opportunity here in Utah for people of color for that reason. But we do see a lot of castings come through our office from our clients requesting diversity and requesting people of color because they want to be able to represent that in their ads and their campaigns and things like that, which is awesome. I mean, it's just great to see so many opportunities for really all of our talent, no matter what ethnicity they are. But definitely our talent of color, we do have a lot that work very frequently for that reason as well, despite that misconception. But the other thing I wanted to touch on too is interracial families and couples or multi-ethnic. Just being a person that grew up in a multi-ethnic family, my dad being African-American and my mom being Caucasian, it was just something that I, you know, it was normal for me. I saw it pretty much all the time. I grew up in Southern California and I saw a lot of our friends, our family friends, just people in our community that were part of interracial or multi-ethnic couples and families. So it was just like part of normal everyday life for me. But I rarely saw it being portrayed on camera or on screen. So it's really cool to see now that, I guess you could say, like the entertainment industry is kind of catching up with society, and just seeing more multi-ethnic and interracial couples and families being shown and represented on screen. And we do see more castings and more opportunities for people who are already part of a family or a couple that is multi-ethnic or interracial, or just opportunities to be able to cast families that way, or, you know, put them together. But it's just really incredible to see that things are evolving and things are progressing, and we're just seeing more representation for people of color on camera.
Yeah, so that's great seeing that. You know, it's funny that she says that because it's 2024 now, you know, and it's weird weird that she's actually, you know, that we have to acknowledge the fact that interracial couples and families actually exist, because I grew up in an interracial family and that was a normal situation for me. But I didn't think of it any differently.
You know, the thing about it though is like you said, we have had so many years of not being up to speed in our industry that everybody involved needs to know what it takes. Like I did a commercial with a blended family. My wife was white and she's laying in this hospital bed. It was for a local hospital network and I was her husband and I thought, wow, this is so cool. Looks like my family, right? And the makeup artist put like a white person's makeup on me. So she's in the hospital bed and I look like I was dying. Like I was like a zombie. It was horrible. And I was surprised we even rolled cameras. I was like, are we gonna shoot with me looking like this? And they were like, yeah, it looks normal. I'm like, oh no.
Well, earlier you mentioned, you used the term colorblind casting. And what I really prefer is color conscious casting. Because anyone who says that they don't see color is, well, that is not a true statement.
Yes.
And rather than pretending that folks have different skin, it's important to embrace that and see what it brings to the story. And so things like this don't happen, or having designers who can speak to an actor about black hair or shiny Asian skin, you know, whatever it is. Like to be able to have an informed conversation that helps that artist feel comfortable and seen so that their focus can be on the work that they're hired to do, not trying to fill in the gaps in someone else's job.
Well, you have to fill those opportunities for people. And that's one of the things that I discovered looking at Plan B Theater is that you're really, really good at nurturing local talent and building that up, because that's something that a lot of people don't necessarily do in this market. In other markets I've seen, that's like the way they handle it. Mm-hmm. So can you speak a little bit to how you help foster the local talent so that they can be capable and able to do those things?
Well, it's just our, at the very base of everything is our mission to develop and produce unique and socially conscious theater that's created by Utah playwrights. So just from the onset, we're working locally. And I believe that there isn't any greater talent pool than the one that we have here. Mm-hmm. Whether it's playwrights or actors, designers, we're in an incredible place with an incredible, well, a very deep, broad and rich group of artists in all disciplines. And I want to celebrate that as much as possible. And about 7 years ago now, we realized that there had never really been a gathering of theater artists of color. And so we put out a call on Facebook and said, we're going to host this thing. Let's get together and meet each other and talk about what it is to be us in this place. And we didn't know if anyone was going to come, but 51 people came.
Oh, wow.
And we had a really robust conversation. And two of the things that came out of that conversation, the two main things were, one, casting. Okay. And that is an industry-wide, both on the theater and the film side, continuing conversation that needs to happen, how people feel safe, how they feel welcome, how they feel seen. The other element of that conversation, which was something that we knew we could directly address, was a conversation about who gets to tell whose story.
Oh, okay. And this is a big thing now.
Yeah. Huge. And so we're in this room full of folks of color and who are saying they want some help telling their own stories. So immediately, I committed in that meeting that we would create some sort of way to do that. We had a longstanding lab of local playwrights that met monthly that was focused on just playwrights, that wasn't necessarily specific to the needs of artists of color. And so we created, in response to this request, a workshop that was 8 weeks long, and we invited the first 8 people that said they wanted to do it at no cost to participate. And we had a really interesting conversation because I said in the meeting, the first person I can think of that has the real credentials and the skill and the respect to do this is a white playwright named Julie Jensen, who is the most produced playwright in the history of Utah.
Wow.
And in this conversation, it was important for us to talk about is she the right person to invite to do this?
Got it.
And everyone said, oh my God, if Julie Jensen will teach us what she knows, we can learn the skill from her and we can bring the stories from us.
Mm. Wow. That's collaboration.
Yeah, and
that's passing on wisdom.
That's beneficial. Yeah. So let me ask you this. I just want to shift gears a little bit from, because you told us something before the show about Davis County. And you do, like, because diversity is more than just skin tone and ethnicity. It's also age and gender and those sort of things. Talk about trying to get a show cast that you guys did in Davis County.
Oh, sure. So this workshop that we started is now called the Theater Artists of Color Writing Workshop. And it's 7 years strong. And it's kind of, infiltrated isn't the right word, but it's really impacting all of our other programming, how we look at who does what in what context. And Davis Arts Council invited us to collaborate on a project called Senior Stages, which they had shuttered temporarily during COVID. The idea is creating theater by seniors, performed by seniors, for seniors in senior care communities. It's a really incredible project, and I was thrilled to be asked to do it, but their focus is Davis County. So when it came time to cast, I wanted to bring our sensibility to the table with casting, and the goal was to cast fully from Davis County, if at all possible. Okay. And so I reached out to
Were you trying to cast older people?
So the kind of standard definition, which is a little, I have to think about how I feel about this now, is older adults, seniors is now kind of defined as those 55 plus.
That would be all of us on the stage.
So I got to think about that a little bit, right?
Don't say it yet.
So the idea was that everyone was on stage was 55 plus if possible. Mm-hmm. We ended up having three short plays that had a younger character in each one of them, so one of the actors was not. But initially, I was just testing the waters to see what the talent pool had to offer in Davis County in terms of actors of color. And so I reached out to all the folks that produce theater in Davis County, and not one of them could supply me with a person to reach out to that was older than 55, that was a person of color. There's one person that we work with frequently, Daryl Stamp, who was directing.
Daner's over 55.
Yeah, but I don't live in Davis County.
Yeah. I'm not over 55. Look how he's just slid that right in there.
Like, wait.
He's always throwing me off the bus.
So it was tricky. I was like, well, how are we going to make this happen? And I was there. There are folks of color who act in this community, which isn't our target community usually. Yeah. So I was less familiar. So what occurred to me in that process is the work that we're doing at Plan B and that other people are doing, specifically nurturing younger artists of color, will fill that gap eventually. And there needs to be a greater commitment from companies throughout the state to think outside necessarily of their own needs and the greater talent pool so that when people are looking for older actors of color in Davis County, as an example, there are people there to refer to. And I will say this, after we started, that show opened at two performances that I went to at two different senior centers, I had Black women who were there that are actors come up to me and say, hey, I would love to be part of this.
Great.
So it was a matter of connecting those who produce with those who have interest and have the skill, and for them to know that there's an opportunity in their own community that they don't have to commute to Salt Lake to do that.
So here's my question, because I want to get back to you in a second, because you saw that clip of Ashley when she was talking about some of the casting things. What do you think when it comes, because I know a lot of what she was talking about was commercial projects. Do you agree with what she was talking about when it comes to, you know, being diverse or and being able to book more parts in Utah? Do you think that's, because I have my opinion about it, but I want to hear your opinion about it.
I would say, you know, things have changed so much. And I think part of, like, as an individual, as an actor, I had to change my own perspective of how, like, things go. Mm-hmm. But I do see companies opening up, and they are offering these mixed families, and I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But yet we're still staying on the same, you know, is it Asian and white? Is it black and white? Is it, you know, we're still staying
stumbling
into these areas.
I have another question for you that's related as well, though, because, you know, you started your career here in Utah, and you've also worked in the L.A. market.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me that if an actor gets successful, a lot of times they'll just like just up and leave, right? And, yeah. You know, and then so what was that experience like? And now you're back. And what made you decide to come back? Like, how does all of that play into this conversation about ethnicity and talent and that sort of thing?
Well, first of all, I've tried to leave here 8 times.
Wow.
I've literally tried to leave here 8 times, and the last time COVID happened. I mean, I had an apartment, I was doing the whole thing, I was doing LA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And COVID happened, and I was sent right back here. And I said, God, if this is where I'm supposed to be, then this is where I'm gonna be.
Okay.
And I had to change my own attitude and accept that Utah is where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be here and nurture the kids. I'm supposed to be here in my older age and supply my talent to becoming a senior that works in a senior home, well, or whatever that is. But it's a very different, you know, within the black community, we have our own issues. There's colorism, there's ageism, there's you grew up bougie and you grew up in the ghetto, or it's how people look at you. And I just decided that it was gonna be my way or no way.
Yeah. And, well, it's so important for the theater arts and theatrical arts to be able to show those perspectives so people feel like they're seen on stage, like you mentioned earlier. And I'm really kind of in love with theater. That's my first love, right? That's where we get a chance to play the really good, big, thick, meaty roles, and we can feel the impact that it has on the audience, right? And in television, commercial, film, the stuff, it's not as immediate, it's not as tangible. I always think of, tell me what you think of this snowflake. I feel like you should be watching at least 3 plays a year at least 3 or 4 different theaters, because a play is like, they're like snowflakes. It's, even though it's the same script, you have different actors, different director, different theater company, it's totally different. There's no 2 plays are the same. Even if you watch the same cast night after night, it's gonna be a little different. And, you know, I feel like for us to really show what it means to be Asian, what it means to be black, this theater is the space where we can really give an audience a sense of that texture.
You know what I just realized? I don't even think our viewers even know that Dana and I are actors. This is like the 4th season. This is season 4, and we've never even told the viewers that we're actors, because Dana and I have been actors for like 20 years. Yeah. He's been longer than me.
But still.
But we've been actors for a long time. We've been in the entertainment industry, so we do have a breadth of knowledge in this whole field. And I just realized that as we were speaking. I was like, I don't even think we've even told them that.
What are these guys talking about?
I'm surprised we haven't done a show about this earlier, but...
We'll get back to this conversation on Roots, Race, and Culture in just a moment.
PBS Utah is also home to other dynamic podcasts. More Than Half covers some of the most challenging issues facing women in Utah and how it takes all of us to make change happen. Here's a clip from the episode, A Separate Space.
I don't think a lot of people realize that it's just not common for people of color, especially women of color, to see themselves in the stories that, you know, we're reading.
Subscribe to More Than Half wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, back to Roots, Race, and Culture from PBS Utah.
I did want to touch back to some of my opinions on what Ashley was saying, because even though a lot of the stuff she says is correct, I think that one of the misconceptions that happens from people who, and this happens to me all the time in this industry, is they go, oh, being ethnic, you must just get booked in so many parts. But what she wasn't talking about there is that she's talking about commercials. She's talking specifically about commercials. Commercials are different. What we don't get booked in a lot of times are films. So films are the things that actors want to get booked in. There's also other plays we don't get booked in. There's some lead roles we don't get booked in. I won't name names. But there's big theater companies out here that we don't get booked in those roles. Mm-hmm. Primarily because we aren't the right skin color. Or because of what you were talking about, colorism. So I'd like to hear you guys speak on that for a moment about, you know, some of the things, like, have you ever been tokenized? Have you ever felt like you were just like, let's hire her because she's just the, we got to check this box off. Let's do that. Or, you know, I'd love to hear about with Plan B, you know, like some of the things you've heard from actors as they've been out in the field when it comes to theater, you know? So I don't know, I'd like to start with you though, Yolanda.
I think film is a place where it's your look, it's how you look. That's aesthetically what they're trying to capture. And so I don't, like I said, I don't feel like you get those roles that are, you know, dare I say substance, but yeah, you're just, it's a totally different ballgame doing theater. It's right there, it's immediate. It's like you say, the first play in a run is so different than the last one. And that's where the work is for me. That's mm-hmm. where it's for me.
What about you, Jerry?
Well, I think the fact that we live in such a homogenous place mm-hmm. where the majority of pretty much every public gathering that isn't culturally or ethnically specific mm-hmm. is a white audience. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful thing in many ways, that we live in a place like the NEA ranks Utah as the number one state in the nation for arts participation, and I think sixth for arts attendance. Like, it's wow. amazing that we live in this place where so many people care, but that doesn't mean they know how to experience a play about an Asian family mm. or a play that's really about deeper themes within a Black experience. And so we have to help them, we have to put it out there and invite them to experience it. But sometimes people are a little nervous about making that investment in something that they don't know is gonna sell or has a broader audience. Mm-hmm. But I personally believe that it's a lot easier for a person from a majority group to find themselves inside a minority story than for the person from a minority to find themselves in the story of the majority.
Wow, that's yeah. really, really great. I've never heard it put that way.
It's so important too, like for people to have an experience outside of what they would experience, you know? And I think that the thing about Plan B that really brings people home is that they do provide that experience. And we have some clips here of some of the plays that you guys do that really take people to another level.
We have Mama, which was produced at Plan B, and that this is the first play in Utah that was telling.
So this is a play by Carlton Bluford, and it was the first world premiere in Utah history by a Black playwright. And this was in 2015. So
wow.
just not even a decade ago.
Yeah. Nice.
That's great. Let's take a look.
I was planning to go on vacation. The first real vacation I had taken in years, this last year in August. My mom found out that her family reunion was happening and desperately wanted me and my brother to go. It fell on the same weekend as my vacation. And I said, Mom, I really need this. And she said, okay, son, you gotta do what you gotta do, but I'd love for you to go. And I decided to go.
How'd you meet my Sammy?
We met at a club. He kept smiling at me all night. I noticed him and I waited for him to make a move, but he never did. As he was leaving, a friend of his came to me and told me to follow him, so I did. He stopped his friend, Sam, before he left and made us introduce ourselves. Your son bought me a drink.
At a club, huh? That's nice, honey. You can put them shells with me. You must like Black men.
I like Sam. I don't see what the problem is.
The problem is all you white women be snatching up all these Black men like they own sales. Black women have a hard enough time trying to hold down a good Black man without all you white women stealing them. I have really good Black friends who would have loved to be with my brother, but not you had to go and get pregnant.
Wow. So
there's D4, yeah, DD yeah, Donald Duffin.
Yeah. Man. You know, I've worked with Cooper Howell. He's great too. So, you know, You hit on something that has been a really serious in question for me that I've always wanted to know. How do people attend these shows? What is it like? Okay, let me simplify this. What's the most successful show you've done that was centered around a diverse cast or a diverse story?
Well, I would say actually in this funky recent COVID world, it was actually the other play that we produced by Carlton called The Cleanup Project in 2022. It was our first play back after 2 years of lockdown, almost exactly 2 years. Okay. And we played to reduced capacity in the theater because of COVID protocols, but we live streamed the show. And so people all over the world got to watch it. I shouldn't say live stream, it was video on demand. Sure. But and that kind of reentry was really exciting for us. And LaToya, who was just in this clip too, she gave this amazing monologue at the end of the play. And the Utah Review called that the best moment on stage in 2022. Because it was something really special. The play was about what if one of the greatest fears of certain white people came true, and that black people took control of the country. What did that look like?
Wow.
And
what a good time to do a show like that.
It was exquisite. Crazy. There's this magical, just incredible. Well, I don't even have the words for what that experience was like. It was scary for Carlton as a writer. It was scary for the actors in the play. It was scary for the audience. But it also was this incredible healing experience for all of us to be able to navigate some of these feelings that sprang from the murder of George Floyd, that we'd all been kind of dealing with in isolation. Mm-hmm. And that play gave us the opportunity to look at that in a very uncomfortable way. And actually, Yolanda helped workshop that play.
That's why I love Plan B. You guys do amazing work.
I feel like
for the community, for the arts, everything, like that is incredible what you just described.
Well, and you know, I will tell you something that really, there was a post-show discussion and this really wonderful patron, who older white woman who has just been an incredible supporter of Plan B for years and years and years. She cornered Carlton after a post-show discussion and she really wanted him to solve the feelings that she was having after this show. And he was like, his response was perfect. It was like, the whole point of this play is for you to feel what you're feeling and go home and figure out what to do with it. And that was a really uncomfortable situation for him to have to say that and for her to have to receive it. And to her credit, I think she did receive it and say, the playwright isn't going to provide this neat little bow for me. I have to face some of my biggest fears, greatest prejudices, and I have to do it at home. And my goal always with theater is, and the work that I choose to produce and that we share with the community is that the moment that we share, the moments we share, the hour and a half we're together in the dark in the theater is the beginning of something. If it doesn't last longer than you get into your car, then we've done something really, really wrong. Mm. It should
people are getting their money's worth, is what you're saying.
I hope so. I hope so.
More than getting their money's worth.
Yeah. I feel like there's the experiences I've had in theater, especially in particular with black theater, because I've done a lot of black theater and just a lot of plays like that.
I saw you in that show.
And Cooper Howell, he was the one that directed that. One of the misconceptions that people have is that, you know, because there's not these big, huge budgets in these smaller plays, because there's not, dazzling lights and a moving stage, that the stories aren't as powerful. And I've done plays with the theater companies where we are on the big stages and you're sold out every night. And I get a bigger, stronger response from some of these smaller plays, like The Color Purple, like when I played Malcolm X for the Grand. And people will come to these plays and they'll have a really visceral experience with that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because a lot of the issues that we do bring up in our stories tend to be things that are not dealt with in some of these other plays that are brought out to the city. So I'd love to hear what your thoughts are about why you think it is that like a lot of people don't come to shows when we have shows with people of color. Why do you think it is that people don't come as much as they do to some of the bigger shows? Because I know you've done black plays and you sometimes look out the audience, see like 15 people there.
Yeah. I ask a lot of my black friends and the number one thing I always get is, are y'all singing? Are you singing in the play? Are you singing? And I'm always like, no, it's a straight play. Come and see it. No, I think, you know, Dana was saying everyone should see 3 plays a year. I think it should be 6. I think the theater is a place where, you know, we get to suspend reality, yet be a part of these great lessons or visions into these different worlds. I love working for Plan B. And the reason being, every time I'm gonna pull a script, I know that writer. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. Jerry has me, ever since I started working with them, I now go out and I read new plays all the time to see what people are writing. And it's fascinating, like all around the country, because you'll have a playwright in New York write something that you as a black person don't really experience here in Utah, but you get to see this experience that happens. And there's nothing, nothing compares to that.
So. Well, let's take a look at you working at Plan B Theater. We have a clip of Oda Might is the name of the show.
Yes, by Camille Washington that we produced in 2019.
Awesome, let's take a look.
Who's waiting for you back at your apartment? Tell me about this love of yours.
What are you talking about? The train
leaves.
Get my bag. It's important.
Why?
I don't remember.
You never brought a bag. Remember last week?
I didn't make it last week. Oh, I have to be there. I have to go. Wait. You said were. You said, was I ever on time?
What did I do?
Were. You said, what did you mean by was I ever on time? I am never on time.
Okay, fine. This has been dragging on long enough, don't you think?
What has?
This game.
Stolen property is not a game. I have got
dead.
What?
You are deceased.
Stop it.
You are dead without life.
I am your court-appointed psychiatrist.
Not anymore.
What a great performance and show.
Look at Yolanda shining.
Yeah. And the thing about the theater is that, like, you know, on you watch movies and everything like that, it's there's a disconnection. It's a screen. But in the theater, like you talked about, the stories, the tangibility, the meaning, it's there. It's live. There's nothing between you but it's air, and you're all breathing it together. And it's just, you feel it so much more powerfully. So that's
And there's definitely, with theater, you have access to the actors. You know, you're not going to have access to, you know, Vin Diesel after Fast X, I promise you. You're going to,
No.
But it's all about the story, which is beautiful. And I tell you, Yolanda's a force on stage. I've seen her on screen, I've seen her on stage, and she is just amazing to watch. So if you ever get a chance, watch her in theater. Now, I want to ask you, because you talked earlier about working with younger people in this industry. What is the importance of, you know, having younger people and engaging younger people into getting into the arts for you?
Wow, without them, we have no audience. Let's face it. Theater, before COVID, everybody was older. Like, everybody was in their 50s, 60s that were regularly patrons of the theater. Now we're getting young kids to see the beauty of theater and the joy of theater. And I really believe that as we keep nurturing them, I think one of the big problems we had was there was this automatic like, oh my God, we're gonna give everybody an opportunity, right? But a lot of these young kids were home and never had an opportunity, and then they're faced with these big opportunities. So I started helping them and teaching acting, and I do it on a really low level. I keep my fees super, super low to help them get ready to get into these bigger spaces. So I think it's really important to raise them up, because we won't have an audience and we won't have performers.
Well, you learn so much too. I mean, the critical thinking skills, emotional intelligence, listening skills, some of the things that are life skills. Confidence. Yeah, that's a huge one.
Confidence is a huge thing that you learn.
Speaking, articulation. We're teaching these kids by getting them involved in the theater. And those are life skills that will never go out of style, will always be relevant. We have another video that's kind of similar to this by Bryson Alejandro. He has an acting company, or, well, a training company, but they focus specifically on actors of color. And let's take a look at that, because I think he has something valuable to say.
Hey there, I'm Bryson Alejandro. I'm a local actor and film producer. I'm a born and raised Utahn and a proud Latino. Acting is hard. Acting as a person of color is often harder, just because there's additional barriers and hurdles that we have to overcome and that we have to face. Whether that's in the casting process or on set or seeking representation. What makes Epoca different than any other acting course or offering in Utah is that we are teaching our actors and our students how to navigate the industry as an actor of color. We are often faced with microaggressions, prejudice, or racism, and we need to know what to do in those instances. We're often asked to play into stereotypes, to do accents. When it comes to lighting, a lot of filmmakers don't know how to light for certain skin tones, especially darker skin tones. We talk about what to do when you're in a hair and makeup chair and the stylist doesn't know how to work with textured or ethnic hair. What makes Epoca especially beautiful and unique is the community that it has created. We've created a safe space where actors of color can come and be themselves and be vulnerable. They don't feel like they have to try to be the best in the room. They don't feel like they have to prove themselves. They don't have to feel like they have to earn their keep to be there, because we accept them and we know that they belong. I feel like the more diversity we have on screen with different characters and protagonists and leads and stories, the more we have the opportunity to fall in love with these characters and with these stories, and to have more empathy for them. And in turn, it will translate into my personal life, and I will see people in my neighborhood, in my community, wherever I go, that might seem different than me or that are different than me, but I can have a greater love and appreciation and empathy towards them because of what I've been exposed in the media content that I'm consuming, because I fall in love with these characters. And so that, to me, is why diversity is so important, because it will spread love, it will spread empathy, and it will make us better people.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I love
To give these people a safe space where they can be vulnerable and explore and learn all those things they're going to run into, so they're not blindsided. So critical. When it comes to young audiences, who I've also worked with a lot, I saw that there's some really cool things that Plan B does. So can you tell us about that?
Sure. We have two programs. One is playwriting residencies in schools, and we have four of those this season. And those are all in schools that are primarily communities of color. And then we also have, we're in our 11th year of our free elementary school tour, which tours statewide. The play that is touring right now is called Squeak by Tito Livas, and it's about what it might be like inside the brain of a child who has ADHD. Mm. It's specifically for kids in K-3. And we have a couple of specific emphases with the free elementary school tour. That list that you put up on screen is pretty much what we focus on, the social and emotional learning elements of education and how that applies to being in a school environment, which, by the way, SEL is mandated by the state of Utah. That's a big controversy in a lot of states right now, but it's actually law here to incorporate that into the school day. So we do our best to support that. But what we really want to do with the free elementary school tour is make sure that kids, specifically BIPOC kids, see that theater is theirs to claim, that it's for them to create, for them to consume as a patron. And one of the ways that we do that is we ensure that every cast is diverse. So it just so happens that we have two casts this season, and we have two Black actors, an actor that is Lebanese and an actor that is Iranian. And it's magical because, like I was saying earlier, a predominantly white group of school kids can see themselves in the story. But when a Black student sees a Black actor telling a story on stage to them, for them, it is a very different experience. It's beyond theater. It's a welcoming. It's an invitation. And we want to extend that to as many kids who don't always feel that, especially in public environments.
Right.
And we also want to be sure that kids who live in remote areas get to have the experience of interacting with people of color.
So you're taking this to schools outside of the Wasatch
Front?
Oh,
yeah. So last week, the tour was in San Juan County.
Oh, wow.
This week, performances are in Cache County. We go statewide. We'll serve 100 schools in person and about another 100 virtually by the end of the school year.
I am so impressed with what you guys do at Plan B. I cannot say that enough.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
it's amazing. That's really cool. We are so lucky to have you in this state.
I think that, and that's a really, really good place to start wrapping up, but I would love to hear just some final words from you, Yolanda, about what is it that you, if I'm a young child, you know, as a young kid of color who's coming into Utah for the first time, I want to get into acting, I want to experience this world, what advice do you have to that kid?
Don't be scared. Mm. Don't be scared. There is a community here. There are people. And you know what? A community can be one person. One person can help you get to where you need to be. You don't need to fear. Mm. The fact that we have these conversations now, a show like this happening in Utah. I moved here in 95, when you couldn't even speak about being Black and people were uncomfortable. So now that there is a place here, and it just every single day, I feel like it gets cracked open a little bit more and a little bit more.
Mm. That's awesome. How about you? Some parting words for us, Jerry?
Yeah, I really feel like we're at a place now where it's imperative to ask where my place is. If you don't see that a place is being set for you at the table, set one for yourself. Mm. Pull your chair up, because that's the only way I think we found ours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And hopefully fewer people will have to do it, because we have done that. The very first thing anyone said to me the first day I walked down the street when I moved to Salt Lake City is, what are you? Mm-hmm. And I hope we move to I hope we get to a place where no one feels that they have the right to ask that question in that way.
Mm. That's powerful.
That's great.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for more content, information about our guests, and other episodes. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out.